shameful and lost for words. Nick, who works for a human rights charity, said, "I'm here to show people that what this government is doing is just disgusting. It's incredibly upsetting to see how we're turning as a country, and it's scary. I'm genuinely scared." The government says people are illegal, but no people can be illegal. But these proposals go completely against international human rights standards. More than 45,500 people crossed the English Channel on small boats to the United Kingdom in 2022, compared with 28,000 the year before. Meanwhile, more than 160,000 people in the United Kingdom are waiting for decisions on their applications for asylum. The Reuters news agency has also covered this story and tells us more. The British government is set to make all asylum claims made by Channel migrants inadmissible through the new migration bill, which was unveiled recently in an attempt to crack down on migrants after huge pressure on the government to settle down the migration crisis across the country. Under the illegal migration bill, migrants who arrive in Britain on small boats will be banned from returning or claiming citizenship in the United Kingdom. Promising to halt crossings under new laws purportedly aimed at working around the European Convention on Human Rights, Prime Minister Rishi Sunak said, "Make no mistake, if you come here illegally, you will not be able to stay." The new legislation lays the responsibility on Prime Minister Sunak and Home Secretary Suella Braverman to tackle the long-running problem. However, the Reuters news agency said in a report that the real aim of Prime Minister Sunak that introduced the bill was to talk tough to save himself. The report said that there have been too many promises from the government to step up action to tackle the issue, but the problem still remains in its place. The government's new plan comes as most of these asylum seekers qualify to have their claims considered in the United Kingdom under international law, and the government cannot declare them inadmissible forcefully. Aside from its casualties, the flow of illegal migrants has also soured Britain's relationship with neighbouring France, prompting a blame game between the two. Meanwhile, as a solution to stop the crossings and manage hundreds of refugees who pass the English Channel every day, the British government signed a deal with Rwanda back in April of 2022 to send those refugees to the East African country. Under the deal signed off by the then Home Secretary Priti Patel, the migrants and asylum seekers entering Britain would be sent thousands of miles away to Rwanda in Africa on a one-way ticket. Britain has promised Rwanda an initial £120 million as part of an economic transformation and integration fund and has pledged to pay for operational costs too. The High Court has ruled that the government's Rwanda asylum plan is legal, but the decision is likely to face further challenges in the courts of law. A rolling programme of promises from the British government to sort out small boat crossings has so far failed to deliver, and there is no evidence showing that the electorate believes the government is doing a good job on this issue. Bloomberg news agency has also covered this issue and tells us more. Government data suggests a record number of over 45,000 migrants have crossed the English Channel to the United Kingdom from mainland Europe in 2022, surpassing the previous year's record of more than 60%. According to the British government figures released recently, in total, 45,756 refugees made the dangerous small boat crossing of one of the world's busiest shipping lanes last year, compared with 28,526 in 2021. Almost 1,300 people made the journey on a single day back in August, the highest such figure ever. Furthermore, in the latest casualties of illegal crossings, four people died in mid-December after a small migrant boat capsized in the frozen waters of the English Channel. The incident, in which 43 other people were rescued, took place in icy conditions off the coast of Kent, where many small boats carrying asylum seekers arrive from France. The illegal migration bill drew fierce criticisms from many, including charities, the opposition, and international organizations. The United Nations Refugee Agency, UNHCR, expressed concern on the matter, saying the legislation would amount to an asylum ban. Additionally, during the Prime Minister's question time in Parliament on Wednesday, 8th of March, the leader of the main opposition Labour Party, Keir Starmer, suggested that the Conservative government were incapable of stopping small boat crossings, underlining that after 13 years of Conservative rule, small boat crossings were higher than ever. Keir Starmer said, "This is their fifth Prime Minister, the sixth immigration plan, the seventh Home Secretary, and after all this time, all they offer is the same old gimmicks and empty promises." In response to Keir Starmer's remarks, Prime Minister Rishi Sunak defended the bill, claiming that stopping the boats was a priority of the public. Rishi Sunak added, "He's just another lefty lawyer standing in our way."
Eight-year defense of Iranian combatants.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
Nowadays, the petrochemical industry has become an indispensable part of the manufacturing and consuming sectors globally, churning out products which include paint, plastic, rubber, detergents, dyes, fertilizers, textiles, etc. The 21st century is witnessing a paradigm shift from west to east in the petrochemical business, with West Asia emerging as a global production hub with natural advantages of low-cost feedstock. Accordingly, the petrochemical industry plays a major role in the Iranian economy and growth. Aside from being an important source of non-oil revenues, it plays a significant part in the expansion of local industries, the development and localization of technologies, and the growth of its downstream industries. Exceptional oil and gas resources availability, diversity of feedstocks, access to international waters, and high-qualified workforce are among the major advantages of the Iranian petrochemical industry. Iran already sits atop the world's second-largest gas reserves and fourth-largest oil reserves. But the Islamic Republic has been pushing private and state-owned companies away from simply extracting raw commodities and into refining products. Traders and experts say that Petchem offers several advantages to Iran as Tehran is facing U.S. West Bloc illegal sanctions. In that regard, over the past two decades, the Islamic Republic of Iran has been taking serious steps for cutting reliance on external sources for meeting the country's industrial and technological needs. And in light of these efforts, indigenizing the knowledge for manufacturing, machinery and equipment has been a major focus in a variety of sectors. For a closer look and analysis, please stay with us on this edition of Iran Today. After the Iraq-Iran war ended in 1989, Iran's fossil energy-related industrial activities gradually shifted from the west to the east along the Persian Gulf coast towards the Bushehr province. This reflected the growing importance of gas and petrochemical production, which were intimately interlinked as gas provided the feedstock for the petrochemical industry.
Our country ranks first in the world in terms of hydrocarbon resources. We mean gas and oil resources. Our country's proven recoverable crude oil reserves are about 150 billion barrels. In the field of gas, I must say that if we equate it, we have about 200 billion gas equivalents of barrels of proven oil that can be extracted. If we add these two together, we have something equivalent to 350 barrels of oil of proven recoverable hydrocarbon resources.
The impetus for the development came mainly from the discovery of South Pars North Field, the world's largest gas field, which lies in the Persian Gulf between Iran and Qatar. When the development of the South Pars Field started in 1998, 28 refinery projects and 30 petrochemical projects were envisioned. Most of the gas and petrochemical plants have been completed by now and manufacture a variety of products, most importantly gas condensates, liquid gas that is propane and butane, rubber and plastics, synthetic fibers, fertilizers, pesticides and polymers.
In our country, since our gas resources are abundant, most of our petrochemical industries have been developed with gas feed. People may not know this, but, for example, these plastic appliances that they see around them, these furniture and chairs, and even our clothes are made of gas. Therefore, the path that creates added value for the country is that we try to really reduce the acceleration of fuel consumption so that there is enough gas and oil for the petrochemical industry.
In 1998, the Pars Oil and Gas Company was created to lead the development of South Pars, and Pars Special Economic Energy Zone was designated as the 14,000 hectares area in and around the Asaluya district of Bushehr province, where the gas from South Pars enters through pipelines and is processed. The petrochemical complexes are led by the state-owned National Petrochemical Company, but private companies are involved as well, including Tamin Petroleum and Petrochemical Investment Company, Persian Gulf Petrochemical Industries Company, Persian Oil and Gas, Jam Petrochemical, Khark Petrochemical, and Ghadir Investment Company. Although Iran has been developing its petrochemical sector for years, traders and analysts say those efforts accelerated after the U.S. unilaterally withdrew from the nuclear deal in 2018.
In relation to the discussion of oil and gas consumption strategy, we can define four approaches. One approach that has usually prevailed in the past 114 years is the approach of selling crude oil, such as exporting crude oil. The second approach is the issue of selling semi-crude oil and gas. This type of consumption is also very wrong. For example, we convert gas into methanol and export it. This does not bring any value to the country's economy, but in fact, it has negative effects. Or, for example, the export of fuel oil, which is worth less than selling crude oil. Or even the export of gasoline and diesel, which are the same. The third approach is the issue of crude burning. We are really caught in a tsunami of crude burning. We burn 1,000 million liters of gasoline every day. This tsunami of crude burning must be prevented. The fourth approach is to sell through petrochemicals, which is actually our salvation. Our salvation is not exports, not refineries, but petrochemicals. However, the same petrochemical products should not be exported, but should be processed and entered into the chain of the ministry industries and converted into goods and then exported.
Since then, sanctions experts say the Iranian petrochemical industry has expanded its capacity, especially with a focus on generating export revenues. Reports indicate that petrochemical sales have been reinforcing Iran's flagging economy with a combination of sanctions evasion and sanctions resilience, while helping it move up the manufacturing value chain.
It's true that the petrochemical industry has helped us a lot and has gained a lot of currency for us in the current economy of the country, which is not in a good condition. But unfortunately, we could not make proper use of this industry and make sufficient use of the country's potential in this field. We have realized only 30% of the country's capacities in this industry.
The petrochemical industry is one of the essential pillars of development and the driving engine of various sectors of the country's economy these days. So far, this industry has reached several important goals, such as increasing export income, expanding downstream sectors, creating jobs, and increasing the GDP. These achievements have been emphasized in the general policies of the resistance economy, focusing on developing petroleum refineries to overcome the vulnerabilities of oil and gas markets. Recent studies indicate that the chain of petrochemical products, with the approach of creating petrochemical refineries, has relatively high advantages compared to chains with the traditional method. Iran will increase its production capacity for petrochemical products by more than a half in the next 3 years as the country moves ahead with plans to increase added value in its petroleum sector, according to government officials.
In the past, our government officials would say we should not sell crude oil. We should go towards petrochemical products. They tried to create petrochemicals, and today we are successful in this field. With the passage of time and the progress of the country, today the officials have taken a step forward in their minds, and the parliament divides petrochemical products into crude and semi-crude and levies duties for their export.
Meanwhile, petrochemical revenues from the export of 22 million tons of products have reached $15 billion in value during the first 11 months of the current Iranian year, that is from March 21, 2022 till February 19, 2023, based on reports by the National Petrochemical Company. Revenues of the petrochemical industry are projected to have increased by $4 billion compared to last Iranian year and reach $19 billion by March 2023.
My argument is that today, as the country is in urgent need for development and growth, we should move away from crude oil burning and go towards downstream petrochemical industries. Our oil companies should serve the country's Ministry of Industries in order to assist the manufacturing sector.
Also, reports show that last year petrochemical feedstock increased by 5 million tons, which were added to the production capacity of the industry. The annual output is now around 35 million tons and will approach 40 million tons by the end of 2023. Moreover, the Iranian government has indicated that stabilizing the price of petrochemical feed and reducing it by 40% can be an important step in reducing the cost of petrochemical products. With these measures, the government is trying to minimize the obstacles so that the advantage in this industry, in addition to the prosperity of the capital market, has an effective help in reducing currency fluctuations in the country.
The first change should be in the manager's approach. The approach of our elites must change. Sometimes our elites have the wrong idea. For example, they say that selling raw materials is bad, but then they go towards the establishment of a refinery. But this is wrong. Our resources are limited now. We must go towards completing the production cycle. That is, we must deliver the product to the Ministry of Industries and create employment.
Furthermore, a separate report by local media said that Iran will launch a total of 35 new petrochemical plants by 2025 to increase the output capacity in the sector by 54% to 140 million metric tons per annum. It said petrochemical output capacity in Iran had increased by 7% in the calendar year to March 2022 to reach nearly 91 million MTPA, thanks to the completion of 7 new petrochemical projects across the country.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
There's plenty more right after a quick diversion into world media. Welcome to the news section of the program. I have picked excerpts from three news websites, starting with Financial Tribune. Jam Petrochem Company sets PE output record. The polyethylene unit of Jam Petrochemical Company in the port city of Asaluye, Bushehr province, has set a record in producing PE in the last Iranian year ended March 20, 2023, the head of the unit said. The unit produced more than 387,000 tons of PE last year, which was 87,000 tons more than the capacity initially designed for the plant. Ali Salimzadeh was also quoted as saying by INA. The unit is one of the largest polymer units in Iran, which produces different ranges of linear light and heavy polyethylene. The unit has the ability to produce more than 60 different grades with various applications, he added. Mehnoos says, Iran-Venezuela Inc. MOUs on oil, gas, petrochemical. Iran and Venezuela signed memorandums of understanding on the development of oil and gas fields, reconstruction of refineries and petrochemical complexes, and oil trade. The documents and MOUs were signed in the presence of Iran's oil minister, Javad Oji, and Venezuelan's vice president, Delcy Rodriguez, and oil minister, Pedro Rafael Telechi, in Caracas. The development of oil and gas fields and the reconstruction and renovation of Venezuelan oil refineries with the aim of maximizing the capacity of these complexes are among the issues mentioned in the memorandums signed between Iran and Venezuela. Heading a delegation, the Iranian minister was officially welcomed by Venezuelan officials on Thursday. His visit is aimed at promoting Tehran-Caracas cooperation in the downstream and upstream sectors. According to Middle East Business and Financial News, Iran's oil production and exports continue to rise despite sanctions. Despite the negative impacts of U.S. sanctions, Iran has been ramping up its oil production and exports over the past few months. In the last 10 months of the past Iranian year, that is March 21, 2022, till January 20, 2023, the country's income from the sales of oil, natural gas, gas condensate, and petroleum products increased by 40% compared to the same period in the previous year. Addressing an open session of the parliament on February 1st, Iranian oil minister Javad Oji reported that 70 million barrels of gas condensate were exported during that time span. In November 2022, Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi stated that the country's oil export had reached pre-sanction levels, highlighting the failure of the enemy's policy of maximum pressure. Despite sanctions, Iran's oil production and exports continue to rise, with the U.S. Energy Information Administration reporting in January that Iran's average oil production in 2022 was 2.54 million barrels per day, 140,000 BPD more than the previous year. With continued growth in its oil industry, Iran is positioning itself to become a major player in the global market. During the last two decades, Iran has developed a significant petrochemical sector. Whenever it makes headlines, however, the reason is often international politics. In June 2019, for instance, the Trump administration imposed severe sanctions on the Persian Gulf Petrochemical Industries Company due to its alleged ties with the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. In reality, the reason had more to do with the significance of PGPIC for Iran's economy, which the U.S. has tried to choke through economic sanctions. The PGPIC group holds close to 40% of Iran's total petrochemical production capacity, and it's responsible for 50% of the country's petrochemical exports.
By nature, the countries on the Middle East side were the countries that mostly provided energy for the West and the East of the world. For example, Saudi Arabia or Iran. Their job was to produce crude oil and export it to Western countries. In this game of the world economy, countries of the Middle East were actually the losers.
We have had a very impressive growth in the field of upstream oil and gas industry. Today, we have the potential to produce nearly 4 million barrels of crude oil in the country, of course, if the pressure of these sanctions is reduced or lifted. In the field of gas, we have practically developed most of our fields.
The second reason why Iran's petrochemical industry gets coverage in the media has to do with sustainable development. According to the International Energy Agency, petrochemical products provide substantial benefits to society, including a growing number of applications in various cutting-edge clean technologies critical to sustainable energy systems. However, the production, use, and disposal of petrochemical-derived products present a variety of climate, air quality, and water pollution challenges that need to be addressed.
In Iran, the environmental organization is active in this field as the vice president and always checks petrochemical factories. Most of Iran's petrochemical industries tries to respect the environmental issues and never neglects it. We have tried to bring our petrochemical units to the coast where possible and to use seawater more than fresh drinking water. We also have a document called Land Acquisition, which emphasizes that petrochemical units should be close to oil sources, that is, by the sea. In this way, exports also will be easy.
To address these challenges, the IEA has outlined a clean technology scenario in a report which provides an alternative future in line with key UN Sustainable Development Goals, such as climate action, responsible consumption, and life below water, among others. The scenario provides an ambitious but achievable pathway to reduce the environmental impacts of petrochemicals, including air pollutants from primary chemicals production declined by almost 90% by 2015, direct carbon dioxide emissions reduced by nearly 60%, and water demand is nearly 30% lower than in the base scenario. It also emphasizes waste management improvements to rapidly increase recycling, thereby laying the groundwork to more than half cumulative ocean-bound plastic waste by 2050. Looking from the environmental perspective, does this industry cause any problems or threats to the environment? And how has environmental considerations been observed so far?
In the past 100 years, the developed countries have developed through cheap energy, crude oil, and gas from third world countries or with coal. It means that they have polluted the environment for more than 100 years and that they have developed with cheap energy. Now that our turn has come, they are pressuring us that you must stop your growth because of the environment. European countries should be told that you must first compensate for the past 100 years that you have polluted the environment and then go to blame other countries. Iran, which is just on the path of development, should not be compared with America, and its growth and development were stopped with these excuses. America's refinery capacity is 19 to 20 million barrels per day. For decades, it has been burning more than 15 million barrels of crude oil on a daily basis.
The IEA's Future of Petrochemicals report was developed with input from governments, industry, and other key stakeholders and seeks to bring the sector the attention it deserves in the global energy policy debate. Accordingly, sanctions are said to be political tools aimed at isolating and hurting the target country's economy, forcing it to change policy. But in the short run, the target country may be forced to adopt alternative survivalist means to evade the grip of inhumane sanctions. In the case of Iran, sanctions have created a thirst for accelerated development to expand water resource infrastructure, generate power, and secure food and energy for Iranians. With aggressive homegrown policies, Iran has managed to evade the sanctions to the extent possible, while inadvertently overlooking environmental consequences. While imposed sanctions are not the main cause of Iran's environmental problems, they have exacerbated the situation and will affect the quality of life and health of many future generations of Iranians. This, then, is the chief dilemma the industry faces. It must continue to meet rising demand under sanctions while finding ways to mitigate its environmental impact and develop new strategies in terms of sustainable developments. But what measures does the industry currently take to neutralize sanctions and protect the environment?
We have a strategy called bypassing sanctions, and we also have another strategy which is neutralizing sanctions. Petrochemical industries and business managers are the main players in the sector of circumventing sanctions. But in the discussion of neutralizing the sanctions, as the analysis of this field have also acknowledged, we should slowly move towards the production of finished products and their exports.
Iran's first strategy is to reduce the vulnerability of its exports to U.S. sanctions by moving away from crude oil and condensate sales, further driving Tehran's shift to petrochemicals. The realization is that it will be easier to export compared to crude and condensate to global markets.
When you sell crude oil, only 200 to 300 refineries in the world can buy your product. But if you sell a polymer product, for example, small factories in some countries of the world, in some corner can be buyers of your product. In fact, it can be said that petrochemical products have more demand, more customers, and therefore their susceptibility to sanctions is much less.
China has been the top customer of Iranian petrochemical shipments in recent years, while exports to countries in the region such as Iraq, India, and Turkey have also surged in recent years. Iran has a diversified petroleum product basket with more than 70 products. As a key player in supplying global petchem demands, Iran's main exports include polyethylene, methanol, benzene, ammonia, sulfur, PVC, and propylene. Tehran's second strategy is increase R&D in sustainable chemical production. In light of that, the petrochemical sector has planned to take optimal advantage of domestic companies in the hope of indigenizing all petrochemical products and equipment within the next few years. Based on the country's current five-year national development plan that is from 2022 till 2026, $35 billion of investment is going to be made in the country's petrochemical industry.
Petrochemical industry is faced with problems that can be solved easily by using the capacity of scientific and research centers. Many agreements have been signed between universities and petrochemical companies, such as Amir Kabir University and Zagros Petrochemical Company. Recently, a joint agreement was signed in the field of digital transformation in Jam Petrochemical between Presidential Deputy for Science, Jam Petrochemical Company, Sharif University of Technology, and Tao Innovation Ecosystem, in line with joint cooperation and capacity utilization of knowledge-based companies.
With abundant hydrocarbon reserves and private sector investments, Iran is working hard to broaden the scope of its petrochemical industry while indigenizing the equipment and machinery needed in the industry, which would be a huge step toward a brighter future for the country.
Iran's petrochemical market is very attractive for several reasons. The first point is that the petrochemical industry in Iran, given the fact that Iran has been under sanctions for many years, has a considerable amount of crude oil and natural gas that can be converted into petrochemical products. It means that raw material is available in abundance and reasonable price. The second advantage is Iran's domestic market. Iran's domestic market has the ability to absorb products produced in the petrochemical industry. It means that the market is attractive. Another issue is that in Iran, investors have easy access to cheap energy in various ways. Cost of labor, fuel, etc., all are cheap and available. These are very attractive and valuable to investors. In addition to these, investing in the Iranian market is reliable and safe.
Accordingly, the Petrochemical Industry Self-Sufficiency Center was launched with the aim of benefiting from knowledge-based and technology companies, domestic manufacturers, and universities and research centers. In line with the achievements attained by these efforts, the National Petrochemical Company has also stated that Iran is now ready to export technical and engineering services in the petrochemical industry to other countries. That's all for today. Thank you from the whole team. Do tune in same time next week and each week after. Don't forget to leave your comments and topic requests. Till next time, take care.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All Compassionate, the All Merciful. Salam and welcome to our latest episode of Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. A fortnight ago, we completed explanation of Surah Taqabun, and this Friday, we embark on explanation of the next surah, that is Surah Talaq, which is number 65 in the serial order of compilation of the Noble Quran. Revealed in Medina, it has 12 ayahs. It outlines the lawful procedures by which a Muslim couple may divorce, and that calls for fair parting between the husband and wife if marriage is to end, in accordance with what is right and within God's prescribed limits, while promising ease and deliverance for the truly God-fearing who undergo this trauma. The surah strongly urges people to observe God's regulations and guidance. To reinforce this point, they are reminded of the fate of earlier disobedient nations, as well as the rewards of the obedient. The surah also emphasizes God's power and knowledge of everything. Here we recite the opening ayah of this surah.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Ya ayyuhan nabiy, idha tallaqtum nisaa fatalliquhun لعدتهن وأحصوا العدة واتقوا الله ربكم لا تخرجوهن من بيوتهن ولا يخرجن إلا أن يأتين بفاحشة مبينة وتلك حدود الله وَمَنْ يَتَعَدَّ حُدُودَ اللَّهِ فَقَدْ ظَلَمَ نَفْسَهِ لَا تَدْرِي لَعَلَّ اللَّهَ يُحْدِثُ بَعْدَ ذَلِكَ أَمْرًا.
In the name of Allah, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful, O Prophet, when you divorce women, divorce them at their prescribed period, that is, while not menstruating or having intercourse with the husband, and calculate the period, and be wary of Allah your Lord. Do not turn them out from their houses, nor shall they go out, unless they commit a gross indecency. These are Allah's bounds, and whoever transgresses Allah's bounds certainly wrongs himself. You never know, maybe Allah will bring off something new later on. Islam puts high emphasis on marriage and formation of family. In some cases, however, conjugal life becomes unbearable for one or both the couple. In such a case, Islam has permitted divorce, but with certain conditions and ethical bounds. The ayah, though, addressing the Prophet, sets the rule for Muslims. It is mentioned elsewhere in the Noble Quran that the prescribed time is specified as the passage of three menstrual periods, which is called Idda, or the waiting period, to enable either reconciliation or formal divorce, so as to ensure the woman is not pregnant and can remarry. It is worthy of note that men are responsible for providing women with alimony and accommodation expenses during this three-month period, and should not force the woman to leave the house. The woman, for her part, should refrain from committing gross indecent acts during this waiting period, including mistreatment and slandering the husband and in-laws that may lead to further problems. The ayah cautions against transgressing the limits set by God Almighty, since these injunctions guarantee the interests of the couple, especially in case of having children, for whose sake the divorce can be revoked by the husband and wife after emotions have subsided. Thus, in the closing words of the ayah, the Almighty Creator says, "Positive things might develop of which you are not aware." From this ayah, we'll learn that number one, marriage is highly emphasized by Islam for building a sound and healthy family unit. But if matters become unbearable, divorce is permitted on certain conditions and within ethical bounds. Number two, in case of separation, the couple should not be despondent and place their trust in God for a better future. Number three, the rights of the divorced wife should be fully observed during the waiting period by the ex-husband, who is responsible for alimony and other expenses. And number four, even after divorce, the couple should maintain good conduct with each other for the sake of children and possible reconciliation after emotions have subsided. We now invite you to listen to ayah 2 and 3 of the same surah.
فَإِذَا بَلَغْنَ أَجَلَهُنَّ فَأَمْسِكُوهُنَّ بِمَعْرُوفٍ أَوْ فَارِقُوهُنَّ بِمَعْرُوفٍ وَأَشْهِدُوا ذَوَيْ عَدْلٍ مِّنكُمْ وَأَقِيمُوا الشَّهَادَةَ لِلَّهِ ذلكم يوعظ به من كان يؤمن بالله واليوم الآخر ومن يتق الله يجعل له مخرجا ويرزقه من حيث لا يحتسب ومن يتوكل على الله فهو حسبه إن الله بالغ أمره قَدْ جَعَلَ اللَّهُ لِكُلِّ شَيْءٍ قَدْرًا
واللائي يئسن من المحيض من نسائكم إن ارتبتم فعدتهن ثلاثة أشهر واللائي لم يحضن وأولاتُ الأحمال أجلهن أن يضعن حملهن ومن يتق الله يجعل له من أمره يسرا.
Then, when they have completed their term, either retain them honorably or separate from them honorably, and take the witness of two fair men from among yourselves, and bear witness for the sake of Allah. To comply with, this is advice whoever believes in Allah and the Last Day, and whoever is wary of Allah, he shall make a way out for him, and provide for him from where he does not reckon. And whoever puts his trust in Allah, he will suffice him. Indeed, Allah carries through His command. Certainly, Allah has set a measure for everything. These ayahs continue that at the end of the three-month waiting period, the couple can either revoke the divorce or formalize it honorably with two fair-minded persons as witness to the formal separation. If divine laws are observed, the Almighty Creator will certainly show a decent way out and provide from where no one has any idea about. From these ayahs, we learn that the presence of two just witnesses at the time of divorce shows that Islam pays high attention to the rights of couples, and the only way to get out of dead ends and crises is to be God-wary and place trust in the Almighty Creator. Now let us listen to ayahs 4 and 5 of Surah Talaq.
ذَلِكَ أَمْرُ اللَّهِ أَنزَلَهُ إِلَيْكُمْ وَمَنْ يَتَّقِ اللَّهَ يُكَفِّرْ عَنْهُ سَيِّئَاتِهِ وَيُعْظِمْ لَهُ أَجْرًا أَسْكِنُوهُنَّ مِنْ حَيْثُ سَكَنْتُمْ وجدكم ولا تضاروهن لتضيقوا عليهن وإن كن أولات حمل فأنفقوا عليهن حتى يضعن حملهن فإن أرضعن لكم فآتوهن أجورهم وأتمروا بينكم بمعروف وإن تعاسرتم فسترضع له أخرى.
And as for those of your wives who do not hope to have menses, should you have any doubts, their term shall be 3 months, and for those as well who have not yet had menses. And as for those who are pregnant, their term shall be until they deliver. And whoever is wary of Allah, He shall grant him ease in his affairs. That is the ordinance of Allah, which He has sent down to you. And whoever is wary of Allah, He shall absolve him of his misdeeds and give him a great reward. In continuation of the conditions for observing the three-month waiting period for women during the divorce, these ayahs set the law for three groups of women, that is, those who have no menstrual period, those who do not have the period due to a disease, and those who are pregnant. The first and the second groups should observe the three-month term before finalization of divorce and formal separation. For the third group, in case of pregnancy, the woman is required to wait until the birth of the child for formalization of the divorce and should not marry another person. Here, it has been stressed four times to observe God-wariness with promises of great rewards for the faithful. These ayahs teach us the following points. Number one, divine laws differ according to the conditions of individuals in harmony with human nature and the infinite mercy of the Almighty Creator. Number two, a child has rights even if it is in the mother's womb, which means a pregnant woman cannot marry another man until after delivery. And number three, whether in conjugal life or in the case of divorce, it is God-wariness which guarantees the solving of all problems.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Ayatollah Khamenei's opinion on the blessed month of Ramadan. The hardships that exist in Ramadan's celebration, the hardships that one endures because of fasting and hunger, are perhaps the greatest achievement of this divine celebration. Fasting has such a large number of blessings in terms of the spirituality and enlightenment that it bestows on one's heart that perhaps it can be said it is the greatest blessing of this month. A number of people fast and thus these people have joined in this celebration and they have benefited from it. But as well as fasting, these people follow Quranic teachings in a perfect manner. They think deeply when they read the Holy Quran. Reading the Holy Quran at nights and at midnights, developing a close relationship with it, and being addressed by God while one is fasting or while one is enlightened, as a result of fasting, gives one a special kind of pleasure, and it has a special significance. The thing that one obtains out of such reading of the Holy Quran cannot be obtained in normal conditions.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, This is the month in which you have been invited to a divine celebration. One should think deeply about this sentence. It says that we have been invited to a divine celebration. It is not obligatory for all people to benefit from this divine celebration. No, it has been made a faridah, an obligatory action. We have the power to choose whether or not to benefit from this celebration. There are some people who do not at all find the opportunity to pay attention to this invitation. They are so ignorant and they pay such careful attention to materialistic issues and the materialistic world that they do not notice. When the month of Ramadan arrives and when it ends, They are like the people who are invited to a very impressive and blessed celebration, but they do not have the time to take part in it, and they do not even look at the invitation card. These people deprive themselves of all the blessings. It is said that the month of Ramadan is the month of a divine feast, and I would like to tell you, dear brothers and sisters, what could be expected to be offered in this feast? One of the things that are offered, and people like you and I should benefit from it, is fasting. Another thing is the Holy Quran. The Holy Quran has been placed on this blessed table, and we have been given more opportunities to recite it in the month of Ramadan than in any other months. Another thing is prayers, such as Dua al-Iftitah and Dua Abu Hamza al-Thumali. All of these things are the blessings that are offered at this divine feast. There are some people who are so much distracted by other things that they do not even notice these blessings.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Iran's defense ministry has made mass delivery of new combat and reconnaissance drones to Iran's army in a ceremony attended by Defense Minister Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Gharayi Ashtiani, as well as the commanders of different divisions of the Iranian army. With the goal of increasing the power of the drone fleet of the Islamic Republic of Iran's army, 200 new indigenously built drones were delivered to the ground force, the navy, the air force, and the air defense force. Minister of Defense and Armed Forces Logistics of Iran hailed the country's advances in drone production, saying that the Islamic Republic's defense doctrine is entirely based on deterrence.
The more powerful the Islamic Republic's deterrent power, the better it can help countries that seek security and stability in the region. Certainly, Iran can help them because its military prowess has contributed to providing peace and stability in the region, and the drones that were delivered to the armed forces today are part of the country's defensive power. This trend will continue.
Iranian experts have made giant strides in boosting defense power by producing various equipment, including different types of drones. Iran's drone program has become a significant deterrent in the region due to the country's ability to conduct combat and reconnaissance missions using these UAVs. Also, Iran's army commander, Major General Abdulrahim Mousavi, highlighted the growing power of the drones used by army units.
With different ranges, sizes, and weights, these drones can perform all kinds of missions for the Islamic Republic of Iran's army. The experience of using drones in new battlefields has shown that they have a significant and decisive effect. This enables the Iranian army to have the upper hand in the battlefield.
The Navy will have a drone range of 2,000 kilometers with the addition of these drones to its fleet. This means that our operational radius will increase significantly. And in addition, due to capabilities of the drones, we can stalk and hunt subsurface targets such as submarines.
The ground forces of the Islamic Republic of Iran's army itself is a manufacturer of UAVs.